said. You just didn't know it. The announcers knew it for you. You'll get better at this, too. Soon you should begin to feel yourself sharing their knowledge. As strange as it may feel, they're a part of you. Each one of those cold, dark shadows a part of her? It made sudden, unexpected sense. It explained how, even from the beginning, even when it scared her, Luce hadn't been able to stop herself from stepping through them. Even when Roland warned her they were dangerous. Even when Daniel gaped at her, like she'd committed some horrible crime. The announcers always felt like a door opening. Was it possible that they really were? Her past, once so unknowable, was out there, and all she had to do was step through into the right doorways. She could see who she'd been, what had drawn Daniel to her, why their love had been damned, how it had grown and changed over time. And, most importantly, what they could be in the future. "We're already well on our way somewhere," Bill said. "But now that you know what you and your announcers are capable of, the next time you go stepping through, you need to think about what you want. And don't think place or time. Think overall quest." "Okay." Luce was working to tidy the jumble of emotions inside her into words that might make any sense aloud.
"Why not try it out now?" Bill said. "Just for practice. Might give us a heads up about what we're going to walk into. Think about what it is you're after."
"Understanding," she said slowly.
"Good," Bill said. "What else?"
A nervous energy was coursing through her, as if she was on the brink of something important. "I want to find out why Daniel and I were cursed. And I want to break that curse. I want to stop love from killing me so that we can finally be together, for real."
"Whoa, whoa, whoa."
Bill started waving his hands like a man stranded on the side of a dark road.
"Let's not get crazy. This is a very long-standing damnation you're up against here. You and Daniel, it's like, I don't know, you can't just snap your pretty little fingers and break out of that. You gotta start small."
"Right," Luce said. "Okay, then I should start by getting to know one of my past selves. Get up close and see her relationship with Daniel unfold. See if she feels the same things I feel." Bill was nodding, a wacky smile spreading across his full lips. He led her to the edge of the ledge.
"I think you're ready. Let's go."
Let's go? The gargoyle was coming with her? Out of the announcer and into another past? Yes, Luce could use some company, but she barely knew this guy.
"You're wondering why you should trust me, aren't you?" Bill asked.
"No,
I get it," he said, hovering in the air in front of her. "I'm an acquired taste, especially compared to the company you're used to keeping. I'm certainly no angel," he snorted. "But I can help make this journey worth your while. We can make a deal if you want. You get sick of me, just say so. I'll be on my way."
He held out his long, clawed hand. Luce shuddered. Bill's hand was crusty with rocky cysts and scabs of lichen, like a ruined statue. The last thing she wanted to do was take it in her own hand. But if she didn't, if she sent him on his way right now, she might be better off with him than without him. She glanced down at her feet. The short, wet ledge beneath them ended where she was standing, dropped off into nothing. Between her shoes, something caught her eye, a shimmer in the rock that made her blink. The ground was shifting, softening, swaying under her feet. Luce looked behind her. The slab of rock was crumbling all the way to the wall of the cave. She stumbled, teetering at the edge. The ledge jerked beneath her, harder, as the particles that held the rock together began to break apart. The ledge disappeared around her, faster and faster, until fresh air brushed the backs of her heels, and she jumped and sank her right hand into Bill's extended claw. They shook in the air. "How do we get out of here?" she cried, grasping tight to him now, for fear of falling into the abyss she couldn't see.
"Follow your heart." Bill was beaming, calm. "It won't mislead you."
Luce closed her eyes and thought of Daniel. A feeling of weightlessness overcame her, and she caught her breath.
When she opened her eyes, she was somehow soaring through static-filled darkness. The stone cave shifted and pulled in on itself into a small golden orb of light that shrank and was gone. Luce glanced over, and Bill was right there with her.
"What was the first thing I ever told you?" he asked.
Luce recalled how his voice had seemed to reach all the way inside her.
"You said to slow down, that I'd never learn anything zipping around my past so quickly."
"And?"
"It was exactly what I wanted to do. I just didn't know I wanted it."
"Maybe that's why you found me when you did," Bill shouted over the wind, his gray wings bristling as they sped along. "And maybe that's why we've ended up right here."
The wind stopped. The static crackling smoothed to silence. Luce's feet slammed onto the ground, a sensation like flying off a swing set and landing on a grassy lawn. She was out of the announcer and somewhere else. The air was warm and a little humid. The light around her feet told her it was dusk. They were sunk deep in a field of thick, soft, brilliant green grass, as high as her calves. Here and there the grass was dotted with tiny, bright red fruit, wild strawberries. Ahead, a thin row of silver birch trees marked the edge of the manicured lawn of an estate. Some distance beyond that stood an enormous house. From here she could make out a white stone flight of stairs that led to the back entrance of the large, Tudor-style mansion. An acre of pruned yellow rose bushes bordered the lawn's north side, and a miniature hedge maze filled the area near the iron gate on the east. In the center lay a bountiful vegetable garden, beans climbing high along their poles. A pebble trail cut the yard in half and led to a large, whitewashed gazebo. Goosebumps rose on Luce's arms. This was the place. She had a visceral sense that she had been here before. This was no ordinary déjà vu. She was staring at a place that had meant something to her and Daniel. She half expected to see the two of them there right now, wrapped in each other's arms. But the gazebo was empty, filled only with the orange light of the setting sun. Someone whistled, making her jump. Bill. She'd forgotten he was with her. He hovered in the air so that their heads were on the same level. Outside the announcer, he was somewhat more repulsive than he'd seemed at first. In the light, his flesh was dry and scaly, and he smelled pretty strongly of mildew. Flies buzzed around his head. Luce edged away from him a little, almost wishing he'd go back to being invisible.
"Sure beats a war zone," he said, eyeing the grounds.
"How did you know where I was before?"
"I'm Bill," he shrugged. "I know things."
"Okay, then. Where are we now?"
"Helston, England."
He pointed a claw tip toward his head and closed his eyes.
"In what you'd call 1854.
Then he clasped his stone claws together in front of his chest, like a gnomy sort of schoolboy reciting a history report.
"A sleepy southern town in the county of Cornwall, granted charter by King John himself. Corn's a few feet tall, so I'd say it's probably midsummer. Pity we missed the month of May. They have a Flora Day festival here like you wouldn't believe. Or maybe you would. Your past self was the belle of the ball the last 2 years in a row. Her father's very rich, see? Got in at the ground level of the copper trade."
"Sounds terrific."
Luce cut him off and started tramping across the grass.
"I'm going in there. I want to talk to her."
"Hold up!"
Bill flew past her, then looped back, fluttering a few inches in front of her face.
"Now this won't do at all."
He waved a finger in a circle, and Luce realized he was talking about her clothes. She was still in the Italian nurse's uniform she'd worn during the First World War. He grabbed the hem of her long white skirt and lifted it to her ankles.
"What do you have on under there? Are those Converse? You've got to be kidding me with those."
He clucked his tongue.
"How you ever survived those other lifetimes without me?"
"I got along fine, thank you."
"You'll need to do more than get along if you want to spend some time here."
Bill flew back up to eye level with Luce,
then zipped around her 3 times. When she turned to look for him, he was gone. But then, a second later, she heard his voice, though it sounded as if it was coming from a great distance.
"Yes, brilliant, Bill."
A gray dot appeared in the air near the house, growing larger, then larger, until Bill's stone wrinkles became clear. He was flying toward her now and carrying a dark bundle in his arms. When he reached her, he simply plucked at her side, and the baggy white nurse's uniform split down its seam and slid right off her body. Luce flung her arms around her bare body modestly, but it seemed like only a second later that a series of petticoats was being tugged over her head. Bill scrambled around her like a rabid seamstress, binding her waist into a tight corset until sharp boning poked her skin in all sorts of uncomfortable places. There was so much taffeta in her petticoats that even standing still in a bit of a breeze, she rustled. She thought she looked pretty good for the era, until she recognized the white apron tied around her waist over her long black dress. Her hand went to her hair and yanked off a white servant's headpiece.
"I'm a maid?" she asked. "Yes, Einstein, you're a maid."
Luce knew it was dumb, but she felt a little disappointed. The estate was so grand and the garden so lovely, and she knew she was on a quest and all that, but couldn't she have just strolled around the grounds here like a real Victorian lady?
"I thought you said my family was rich." "Your past self's family was rich. Filthy rich. You'll see when you meet her. She goes by Lucinda, and thinks your nickname is an absolute abomination, by the way."
Bill pinched his nose and lifted it high in the air, giving a pretty laughable imitation of a snob.
"She's rich, yes, but you, my dear, are a time-traveling intruder who knows not the ways of this high society. So, unless you want to stick out like a Manchester seamstress and get shown the door before you even get to have a chat with Lucinda, you need to go undercover. You're a scullery maid, serving girl, chamber pot changer. It's really up to you." "Don't worry, I'll stay out of your way. I can disappear in the blink of an eye."
Luce groaned. "And I just go in and pretend like I work here?"
"No."
Bill rolled his flinty eyes. "Go up and introduce yourself to the lady of the house, Mrs. Constance. Tell her your last placement moved to the continent and you're looking for new employment. She's an evil old harridan and a stickler for references. Lucky for you, I'm one step ahead of her. You'll find yours inside your apron pocket." Luce slipped her hand inside the pocket of her white linen apron and pulled out a thick envelope. The back was stamped shut with a red wax seal. When she turned it over, she read, "Mrs. Melville Constance," scrawled in black ink.
"You're kind of a know-it-all, aren't you?" "Thank you."
Bill bowed graciously. Then, when he realized Luce had already started toward the house, he flew ahead, beating his wings so rapidly they became 2 stone-colored blurs on either side of his body. By then, they had passed the silver birches and were crossing the manicured lawn. Luce was about to start up the pebble path to the house, but hung back when she noticed figures in the gazebo. A man and a woman walking toward the house, toward Luce.
"Get down," she whispered.
She wasn't ready to be seen by anyone in Helston, especially not with Bill buzzing around her like some oversized insect.
"You get down," he said. "Just because I made an invisibility exception for your benefit doesn't mean just any mere mortal can see me. I'm perfectly discreet where I am. Matter of fact, the only eyes I have to be watchful about are..." "Whoa! Hey!"
Bill's stone eyebrows shot up suddenly, making a heavy dragging noise.
"I'm out," he said,
ducking down behind the tomato vines. "Angels," Luce filled in. They must be the only other souls who could see Bill in this form. She guessed this because she could finally make out the man and woman, the ones who'd prompted Bill to take cover. Gaping through the thick, prickly leaves of the tomato vine, Luce couldn't tear her eyes away from them. Away from Daniel, really. The rest of the garden grew very still. The birds' evening songs quieted, and all she could hear were 2 pairs of feet walking slowly up the gravel path. The last rays of the sun all seemed to fall upon Daniel, throwing a halo of gold around him. His head was tipped toward the woman, and he was nodding as he walked. The woman, who was not Luce. She was older than Lucinda could have been, in her 20s, most likely, and very beautiful, with dark, silken curls under a broad straw hat. Her long muslin dress was the color of a dandelion, and looked like it must have been very expensive.
"Have you come to like our little hamlet much at all, Mr. Grigori?"
the woman was saying. Her voice was high and bright and full of natural confidence.
"Perhaps too much, Margaret."
Luce's stomach tied up in a jealous knot as she watched Daniel smile at the woman.
"It's hard to believe it's been a week since I arrived in Helston. I could stay on longer, even, than I'd planned."
He paused.
"Everyone here has been very kind."
Margaret blushed, and Luce seethed. Even Margaret's blushing was lovely.
"We only hope that will come through in your work," she said. "Mother's thrilled, of course, to have an artist staying with us. Everyone is."
Luce crawled along after them as they walked. Past the vegetable garden, she crouched down behind the overgrown rose bushes, planting her hands on the ground and leaning forward to keep the couple in earshot. Then Luce gasped. She'd pricked her thumb on a thorn. It was bleeding. She sucked on the wound and shook her hand, trying not to get blood on her apron, but by the time the bleeding had stopped, she realized she'd missed part of the conversation. Margaret was looking up at Daniel expectantly.
"I asked you if you'll be at the solstice festivities later this week."
Her tone was a bit pleading.
"Mother always makes a big to-do."
Daniel murmured something like, yes, he wouldn't miss it, but he was clearly distracted. He kept looking away from the woman. His eyes darted around the lawn, as if he sensed Luce behind the roses. When his gaze swept over the bushes where she crouched, they flashed the most intense shade of violet. 6. The Woman in White. Helston, England, June 18, 1854. By the time Daniel got to Helston, he was angry. He recognized the setting at once, as soon as the announcer ejected him alone onto the shingle banks of the Low. The lake was still, reflecting big tufts of pink cloud in the evening sky. Startled by his sudden appearance, a pair of kingfishers took off across the field of clover and came to rest in a crooked moorland tree beside the main road. The road led, he knew, into the small town where he'd spent a summer with Lucinda. Standing again on this rich green earth touched a soft place inside him. As much as he worked to close every door to their past, as much as he strove to move beyond each one of her heartbreaking deaths, some mattered more than others. He was surprised at how clearly he still recalled their time in the south of England. But Daniel wasn't here on holiday. He wasn't here to fall in love with the beautiful copper trader's daughter. He was here to stop a reckless girl from getting so lost in the dark moments of her past that it killed her. He was here to help her undo their curse once and for all. He started the long walk toward town. It was a warm and lazy summer evening in Helston. Out on the streets, ladies in bonnets and lace-trimmed gowns spoke in low, polite voices to the linen-suited men whose arms they held. Couples paused in front of shop windows. They lingered to speak with their neighbors. They stopped on street corners and took 10 minutes to say goodbye. Everything about these people, from their attire to the pace of their strolling, was so infuriatingly slow. Daniel could not have felt more at odds with the passers-by on the street. His wings, hidden beneath his coat, burned with his impatience as he waded through the people. There was one fail-safe place where he knew he could find Lucinda. She visited the gazebo in his patron's back garden most evenings, just after dusk. But where he might find Luce, the one hopping in and out of announcers, the one he needed to find, that there was no way of knowing. The other two lives Luce had stumbled into made some sense to Daniel. In the grand scheme, they were anomalies. Past moments when she had come close to unraveling the truth of their curse just before she died. But he couldn't figure out why her announcer had brought her here. Helston had been a mostly peaceful time for them. In this life, their love had grown slowly, naturally. Even her death had been private, between just the two of them. Once, Gabby had used the word respectable to describe Lucinda's end in Helston. That death, at least, had been theirs alone to suffer. No, nothing made sense about the accident of her revisiting this life, which meant she could be anywhere in the hamlet.
"Why, Mr. Grigori,"
a trilling voice called out on the street.
"What a wonderful surprise to find you here in town."
A blonde woman in a long, patterned blue dress stood before Daniel, taking him utterly by surprise. She held the hand of a pudgy, freckled 8-year-old boy, who looked miserable in a cream-colored jacket with a stain underneath the collar. At last it dawned on Daniel. Mrs. Holcomb and her talentless son, Edward, whom he'd given drawing lessons to for a few painful weeks while in Helston. "Hello, Edward." Daniel leaned down to shake the little boy's hand, then bowed to his mother. "Mrs. Holcomb." Until that moment, Daniel had given little thought to his wardrobe as he moved through time. He didn't care what someone on the street thought of his modern gray slacks, or whether the cut of his white Oxford shirt looked odd compared to any other man's in town. But if he was going to run into people he'd actually known nearly 200 years ago, wearing the clothes he'd worn 2 days ago to Luce's parents' Thanksgiving, word might begin to travel around. Daniel didn't want to draw any attention to himself. Nothing could stand in the way of finding Luce. He would simply have to find something else to wear. Not that the Holcombs noticed. Luckily, Daniel had returned to a time when he'd been known as an eccentric artist.
"Edward, show Mr. Grigori what Mama just bought you," Mrs. Holcomb said, smoothing her son's unruly hair.
The boy reluctantly produced a small paint kit from a satchel, 5 glass pots of oil paint and a long red wooden-handled brush. Daniel made the requisite compliments about how Edward was a very lucky little boy, one whose talent now had the proper tools, while trying not to be obvious about looking past the pair for the quickest way out of the conversation.
"Edward's such a gifted child," Mrs. Holcomb insisted, taking hold of Daniel's arm. "Trouble is, he finds your drawing lessons just a little less thrilling than a boy his age expects. It's why I thought a proper paint set might allow him to really come into his own, as an artiste. You understand, Mr. Grigori?"
"Yes, yes, of course." Daniel cut her off. "Give him whatever makes him want to paint. Brilliant plan."
A coldness spread through him and froze his words in his throat. Cam had just exited from a pub across the street. For a moment, Daniel churned with anger. He'd been clear enough that he wanted no help from the others. His hands balled into fists, and he took a step toward Cam. But then... Of course, this was Cam from the Helston era. And by the looks of it, Cam was having the time of his life in his fancy striped tapered slacks and Victorian smoking cap. His black hair was long, cascading just past his shoulders. He leaned against the pub's door, joking with 3 other men. Cam slipped a gold-tipped cigar out of a square metal case. He hadn't seen Daniel yet. As soon as he did, he would quit laughing. From the beginning, Cam had traveled through the announcers more than any of the fallen angels. He was an expert in ways Daniel never could be. That was a gift of those who'd thrown in with Lucifer. They had a talent for traveling through the shadows of the past. One look at Daniel would tell this Victorian Cam that his rival was an anachronism, a man out of time. Cam would realize that something big was going on. Then Daniel would never be able to shake him.
"You're so very generous, Mr. Grigori."
Mrs. Holcomb was still nattering, still had Daniel gripped by his shirt sleeve. Cam's head began to swivel in his direction.
"Think nothing of it." The words rushed out of Daniel. "Now, if you'll excuse me."
He pried her fingers loose.
"I've just got to buy some new clothes."
He made a speedy bow and rushed through the door of the nearest shop.
"Mr. Grigori!"
Mrs. Holcomb was practically shouting his name. Silently, Daniel cursed her, pretending he was out of earshot, which only made her call more loudly.
"But that's a dressmaker's, Mr. Grigori,"
she shouted, cupping her hands over her mouth. Daniel was already inside. The glass door of the shop slammed behind him, the bell that was tied to the hinge ringing. He could hide here, at least for a few minutes, in the hopes that Cam hadn't seen him, or heard Mrs. Holcomb's shrill voice. The shop was quiet and smelled of lavender. Well-heeled shoes had worn down its wooden floors, and the shelves along the walls were stacked to the ceiling with bolts of colorful fabrics. Daniel lowered the lace curtain over the window so he'd be less visible from the street. When he turned, he caught a glimpse in the mirror of another person in the shop. He swallowed a moan of surprised relief. He'd found her. Luce was trying on a long white muslin dress, its high neck fastened with a yellow ribbon, bringing out the incredible hazel of her eyes. Her hair was tied back to one side, clipped with a beaded floral pin. She kept fidgeting with the way the sleeves fell on her shoulders as she stood, examining herself from as many angles as she could in the mirror. Daniel adored all of them. He wanted to stand there, admiring her forever, but then he remembered himself. He strode toward her and grabbed her by the arm.
"This has gone on long enough."
Even as he spoke, Daniel felt overcome by the delicious feel of her skin against his hand. The last time he touched her was the night he thought he'd lost her to the outcasts.
"Do you have any idea what a scare you gave me? You're not safe here on your own," he said.
Luce didn't start arguing with Daniel, as he'd expected. Instead, she screamed and slapped him smartly across the face. Because she wasn't Luce, she was Lucinda. And, what was worse, they hadn't even met yet in this lifetime. She must have just come back from London with her family. She and Daniel must have been about to meet at the Constance's summer solstice party. He could see all of that now, as the shock registered on Lucinda's face.
"What day is this?" he asked desperately.
She would think he was insane. Across the room, he had been too love-struck to note the difference between the girl he'd already lost and the girl he had to save.
"I'm sorry," he whispered.
This was exactly why he was so terrible as an anachronism. He got completely lost in the smallest of things. One touch of her skin, one look into her deep hazel eyes, one whiff of the scented powder along her hairline, one shared breath in the cramped space of this tiny shop. Lucinda winced as she looked at his cheek. In the mirror, it was bright red where she'd slapped him. Her eyes traveled to meet his, and his heart felt like it was caving in. Her pink lips parted, and her head cocked slightly to the right. She was looking at him like a woman deep in love.
No.
There was a way it was supposed to happen, a way it had to happen. They were not supposed to meet until the party. As much as Daniel cursed their fate, he would not disrupt the lives she'd lived before. They were what kept her coming back to him. He tried to look as uninterested and scowly as possible. Crossing his arms over his chest, shifting his weight to create more space between them, keeping his eyes everywhere, but where they wanted to be, on her.
"I'm sorry," Lucinda said, pressing her hands over her heart. "I don't know what came over me. I've never done anything like that."
Daniel wasn't going to argue with her now, though she'd slapped him so many times over the years that Arian kept a tally in a little spiral notebook marked, "You're fresh."
"My mistake," he said quickly. I thought you were someone else."
He'd already interfered with the past too much, first with Lucia in Milan, and now here. He began to back away.
"Wait!"
She reached for him. Her eyes were lovely, hazel orbs of light pulling him back.
"I feel almost as if we do know one another, though I can't quite remember."
"I don't think so, I'm afraid."
He'd made it to the door by then, and was parting the curtain on the window to see if Cam was still outside. He was. Cam's back was to the shop, and he was making animated gestures, telling some fabricated story in which he was surely the hero. He could turn around at the slightest provocation. Then Daniel would be caught.
"Please, sir, stop."
Lucinda hurried toward Daniel.
"Who are you? I think I know you. Please, wait."
He'd have to take his chances on the street. He could not stay here with Lucinda. Not when she was acting like this. Not when she was falling in love with the wrong version of himself. He'd lived this life before, and this was not how it had happened. So he had to flee. It killed Daniel to ignore her, to go away from Lucinda, when everything in his soul was telling him to turn around and fly right back to the sound of her voice, to the embrace of her arms and the warmth of her lips, to the spellbinding power of her love. He yanked the shop door open and fled down the street, running at the sunset, running for all he was worth. He did not care at all what it looked like to anyone else in town. He was running out the fire in his wings. 7. Solstice, Helston, England, June 21, 1854. Luce's hands were scalded and splotchy and tender to the bone. Since she'd arrived at the Constance's estate in Helston 3 days before, she'd done little more than wash an endless pile of dishes. She worked from sunrise to sunset, scrubbing plates and bowls and gravy boats and whole armies of silverware, until, at the end of the day, her new boss, Miss McGovern, laid out supper for the kitchen staff, a sad platter of cold meat, dry hunks of cheese, and a few hard rolls. Each night, after dinner, Luce would fall into a dreamless, timeless sleep on the attic cot she shared with Henrietta, her fellow kitchen maid, a buck-toothed, straw-haired, bosomy girl who'd come to Helston from Penzance. The sheer amount of work was astonishing. How could one household dirty enough dishes to keep two girls working 12 hours straight? But the bins of food-caked plates kept arriving, and Miss McGovern kept her beady eyes fixed on Luce's washbasin. By Wednesday, everyone at the estate was buzzing about the solstice party that evening, but to Luce, it only meant more dishes. She stared down at the tin tub of scuzzy water, full of loathing. "This is not what I had in mind," she muttered to Bill, who was hovering, always, on the rim of the cupboard next to her wash tub. She still wasn't used to being the only one in the kitchen who could see him. It made her nervous every time he hovered over other members of the staff, making dirty jokes that only Luce could hear, and no one, besides Bill, ever laughed at. "You children of the millennium have absolutely no work ethic," he said. "Keep your voice down, by the way." Luce unclenched her jaw. "If scrubbing this disgusting soup tureen had anything to do with understanding my past, my work ethic would make your head spin. But this is pointless." She waved a cast-iron skillet in Bill's face. Its handle was slick with pork grease. "Not to mention nauseating." Luce knew her frustration didn't have anything to do with the dishes. She probably sounded like a brat. But she'd barely been above ground since she'd started working here. She hadn't seen Helston Daniel once since that first glimpse in the garden, and she had no idea where her past self was. She was lonely and listless and depressed in a way she hadn't been since those awful early days at Sword and Cross, before she'd had Daniel, before she'd had anyone she could truly count on. She'd abandoned Daniel, Miles and Shelby, Arian and Gabby, Callie and her parents, all for what? To be a scullery maid? No, to unravel this curse, something she didn't even know whether she was capable of doing. So Bill thought she was being whiny. She couldn't help it. She was inches away from a breakdown. "I hate this job. I hate this place. I hate this stupid solstice party and this stupid pheasant souffle." "Lucinda will be at the party tonight," Bill said suddenly. His voice was infuriatingly calm. "She happens to adore the Constance's pheasant souffle." He flitted up to sit cross-legged on the countertop, his head twisting a creepy 360 degrees around his neck to make sure the two of them were alone. "Lucinda will be there?" Luce dropped the skillet and her scrub brush into the sudsy tub. "I'm going to talk to her. I'm getting out of this kitchen and I'm going to talk to her." Bill nodded, as if this had been the plan all along. "Just remember your position. If a future version of yourself had popped up at some boarding school party of yours and told you..." "I would have wanted to know," Luce said. "Whatever it was, I would have insisted on knowing everything. I would have died to know."
Well, Bill shrugged. "Lucinda won't. I can guarantee you that."
"That's impossible," Luce shook her head. "She's... me."
"Nope,"
She's a version of you who has been reared by completely different parents in a very different world. You share a soul, but she's nothing like you. You'll see.
He gave her a cryptic grin.
Just proceed with caution.
Bill's eyes shot toward the door at the front of the large kitchen, which swung open abruptly.
Look lively, Luce.
He plunked his feet into the wash tub and let out a raspy, contented sigh, just as Miss McGovern entered, pulling Henrietta by the elbow. The head maid was listing the courses for the evening meal.
After the stewed prunes, she droned.
On the other side of the kitchen, Luce whispered to Bill. We're not finished with this conversation. His stony feet splashed suds onto her apron.
May I advise you to stop talking to your invisible friends while you're working? People are going to think you're crazy.
I'm beginning to wonder about that myself. Luce sighed and stood straight, knowing that was all she was going to get out of Bill, at least until the others had left.
I'll expect you and Myrtle to be in tip-top shape this evening, Miss McGovern said loudly to Henrietta, sending a quick glare back at Luce.
Myrtle, the name Bill had made up on her letters of reference.
Yes, miss, Luce said flatly.
Yes, miss.
There was no sarcasm in Henrietta's reply. Luce liked Henrietta well enough, if she overlooked how badly the girl needed a bath. Once Miss McGovern had bustled out of the kitchen and the two girls were alone, Henrietta hopped up on the table next to Luce, swinging her black boots to and fro. She had no idea that Bill was sitting right beside her, mimicking her movements.
"Fancy a plum?"
Henrietta asked, pulling two ruby-colored spheres from her apron pocket and holding one out to Luce. What Luce liked most about the girl was that she never did a drop of work unless the boss was in the room. They each took a bite, grinning as the sweet juice trickled from the sides of their mouths.
"Thought I heard you talking to someone else in here before," Henrietta said.
She raised an eyebrow.
"Have you got yourself a fellow, Myrtle?" "Oh, please don't say it's Harry from the stables. He's a rotter, he is."
Just then, the kitchen door swung open again, making both girls jump, drop their fruit, and pretend to scrub the nearest dish. Luce was expecting Miss McGovern, but she froze when she saw two girls in beautiful, matching white silk dressing gowns squealing with laughter as they tore through the filthy kitchen. One of them was Arian. The other, it took Luce a moment to place her, was Annabelle. The hot, pink-headed girl Luce had met for just a moment at Parents' Day, all the way back at Sword and Cross. She'd introduced herself as Arian's sister. Some sister. Henrietta kept her eyes down, as if this game of tag through the kitchen were a normal occurrence, as if she might get in trouble if she even pretended to see the two girls, who certainly didn't see either Luce or Henrietta. It was like the servants blended in with the filthy pots and pans. Or else Arian and Annabelle were just laughing too hard. As they squeezed past the pastry-making table, Arian grabbed a fistful of flour from the marble slab and tossed it in Annabelle's face. For half a second, Annabelle looked furious. Then she started laughing even harder, grabbing a fistful herself and casting it at Arian. They were gasping for air by the time they barreled through the back door, out to the small garden, which led to the big garden, where the sun actually shone, and where Daniel might be, and where Luce was dying to follow. Luce couldn't have pinned down what she was feeling if she'd tried. Shock or embarrassment, wonder or frustration. All of it must have shown on her face, because Henrietta eyed her knowingly and leaned in to whisper.
"That lot arrived last night. Someone's cousins from London, in town for the party."
She walked over to the pastry table.
"They nearly wrecked the strawberry pie with their antics. Oh, it must be lovely being rich. Maybe in our next lives. Hey, Myrtle?"
"Ah."
It was all Luce could manage.
"I'm off to set the table, sadly," Henrietta said, cradling a stack of china under her fleshy pink arm. "Why not have a handful of flour ready to toss, just in case those girls come back this way?"
She winked at Luce and pushed the door open with her broad behind, then disappeared into the hallway. Someone else appeared in her place, a boy, also in a servant's outfit, his face hidden behind a giant box of groceries. He set them down on the table across the kitchen from Luce. She started at the sight of his face. At least, having just seen Arian, she was a little more prepared.
"Roland!"
He twitched when he looked up, then collected himself. As he walked toward her, it was her clothes Roland couldn't stop staring at. He pointed to her apron.
"Why are you dressed like that?"
Luce tugged at the tie in her apron, pulling it off.
"I am not who you think I am."
He stopped in front of her and stared, turning his head first slightly to the left, then to the right.
"Well, you're the spitting image of another girl I know. Since when do the Biscoes go slumming in the scullery?"
"The Biscoes?"
Roland raised an eyebrow at her, amused.
"Oh, I get it. You're playing at being someone else. What are you calling yourself?"
"Myrtle," Luce said miserably.
"And you are not the Lucinda Biscoe to whom I served that quince tart on the terrace 2 days ago?"
"No."
Luce didn't know what to say, how to convince him. She turned to Bill for help, but he had disappeared even from her view. Of course. Roland, fallen angel that he was, would have been able to see Bill.
"What would Miss Biscoe's father say if he saw his daughter down here, up to her elbows in grease?"
Roland smiled.
"It's a fine prank to pull on him."
"Roland, it is not a..."
"What are you hiding from up there, anyhow?"
Roland jerked his head toward the garden. A tinny rumbling in the pantry at Luce's feet revealed where Bill had gone. He seemed to be sending her some kind of signal, only she had no idea what it was. Bill probably wanted her to keep her mouth shut, but what was he going to do, come out and stop her? A sheen of sweat was visible on Roland's brow.
"Are we alone, Lucinda?"
"Absolutely."
He cocked his head at her and waited.
"I don't feel that we are."
The only other presence in the room was Bill. How could Roland sense him when Arian had not?
"Look, I'm really not the girl you think I am," Luce said again. "I am a Lucinda, but I'm here from the future. It's hard to explain, actually."
She took a deep breath.
"I was born in Thunderbolt, Georgia, in 1992.
"Oh,"
Roland swallowed.
Well.
He closed his eyes and started speaking very slowly.
"And the stars in the sky fell to the earth, like figs blown off a tree in a gale."
The words were cryptic, but Roland recited them soulfully, almost like he was quoting a favorite line from an old blues song, the kind of song she'd heard him sing at a karaoke party back at Sword and Cross. In that moment, he seemed like the Roland she knew back home, as if he'd slipped out of this Victorian character for a little while. Only there was something else about his words. Luce recognized them from somewhere.
"What is that? What does that mean?" she asked.
The cupboard rattled again, more loudly this time.
"Nothing."
Roland's eyes opened, and he was back to his Victorian self. His hands were tough and calloused, and his biceps were larger than she was used to seeing them. His clothes were soaked with sweat against his dark skin. He looked tired. A heavy sadness fell over Luce.
"You're a servant here?" she asked. "The others, Arian, they get to run around and... But you have to work, don't you? Just because you're..."
"Black,"
Roland said, holding her gaze until she looked away, uncomfortable.
"Don't worry about me, Lucinda. I've suffered worse than mortal folly. Besides, I'll have my day."
"It gets better," she said, feeling that any reassurance she gave him would be trite and insubstantial,
wondering if what she said was really true. "People can be awful."
"Well, we can't worry about them too much, can we?"
Roland smiled.
"What brought you back here anyway, Lucinda? Does Daniel know? Does Cam?"
"Cam's here too?"
Luce shouldn't have been surprised, but she was.
"If my timing's right, he's probably just rolled into town."
Luce couldn't worry about that now.
"Daniel doesn't know, not yet," she admitted. "But I need to find him, and Lucinda too. I have to know..."
"Look,"
Roland said, backing away from Luce, his hands raised, almost as if she were radioactive.
You didn't see me here today. We didn't have this talk. But you can't just go up to Daniel.
I know, she said. He'll freak out.
Freak out?
Roland tried out the strange-sounding phrase, almost making Luce laugh.
If you mean he might fall in love with this you,
he pointed at her,
then yes. It's really quite dangerous. You're a tourist here.
Fine, then I'm a tourist, but I can at least talk to them.
No, you can't. You don't inhabit this life.
I don't want to inhabit anything. I just want to know why.
Your being here is dangerous. To you, to them, to everything. Do you understand?
Luce didn't understand. How could she be dangerous? I don't want to stay here. I just want to know why this keeps happening between me and Daniel. I mean, between this Lucinda and Daniel.
That's precisely what I mean.
Roland dragged his hand down his face, giving her a hard look.
Hear me. You can observe them from a distance. You can, I don't know, look through the windows, so long as you know nothing here is yours to take.
But why can't I just talk to them? He went to the door and closed and bolted it. When he turned back, his face was serious.
Listen, it is possible that you might do something that changes your past, something that ripples down through time and rewrites it so that you, future Lucinda, will be changed.
So I'll be careful.
There is no careful. You are a bull in the china shop of love. You'll have no way of knowing what you've broken or how precious it may be. Any change you enact is not going to be obvious. There will be no great sign reading, "If you veer right, you shall be a princess," versus "If you veer left, you'll remain a scullery maid forever."
Come on, Roland. Don't you think I have slightly loftier goals than ending up a princess? Luce said sharply.
I could venture a guess that there is a curse you want to put an end to.
Luce blinked at him, feeling stupid.
Right, then, best of luck.
Roland laughed brightly.
But even if you succeed, you won't know it, my dear. The very moment you change your past, that event will be as it has always been, and everything that comes after it will be as it has always been. Time tidies up after itself, and you're part of it, so you will not know the difference.
I'd have to know, she said, hoping that saying it aloud would make it true. Surely I'd have some sense. Roland shook his head.
No, but most certainly, before you could do any good, you would distort the future by making the Daniel of this era fall in love with you instead of that pretentious twit Lucinda Biscoe.
I need to meet her. I need to see why they love each other. Roland shook his head again.
It would be even worse to get involved with your past self, Lucinda. Daniel at least knows the dangers and can mind himself so as not to drastically alter time. But Lucinda Biscoe, she doesn't know anything.
None of us ever do, Luce said, around a sudden lump in her throat.
This Lucinda, she doesn't have a lot of time left. Let her spend it with Daniel. Let her be happy. If you overstep into her world and anything changes for her, it could change for you too, and that could be most unfortunate.
Roland sounded like a nicer, less sarcastic version of Bill. Luce didn't want to hear any more about all the things she couldn't do, shouldn't do. If she could just talk to her past self. What if Lucinda could have more time? She asked. What if...
It's impossible. If anything, you'll just hasten her end. You're not going to change anything by having a chat with Lucinda. You're just going to make a mess of your past lives, along with your current one.
My current life is not a mess, and I can fix things. I have to.
Well, I suppose that remains to be seen. Lucinda Biscoe's life is over, but your ending has yet to be written.
Roland dusted off his hands on his trouser legs.
Maybe there is some change you can work into your life, into the grand story of you and Daniel, but you'll not do that here.
As Luce felt her lips stiffen into a pout, Roland's face softened.
Look, he said, at least I'm glad you're here.
You are?
No one else is going to tell you this, but we're all rooting for you. I don't know what brought you here or how the journey was even possible, but I have to think it's a good sign.
He studied her until she felt ridiculous.
You're coming into yourself, aren't you?
I don't know, Luce said. I think so. I'm just trying to understand.
Good.
Voices in the hallway made Roland suddenly pull away from Luce toward the door.
I'll see you tonight, he said,
unbolting the door and quietly slipping out. As soon as Roland was gone, the cupboard door swung open, banging the back of her leg. Bill popped out, gasping for air loudly, as if he'd been holding his breath the whole time.
I could wring your neck right now, he said, his chest heaving.
I don't know why you're all out of breath. It's not like you even breathe.
It's for effect. All the trouble I go through to camouflage you here, and you go and out yourself to the first guy who walks through the door.
Luce rolled her eyes. Roland's not going to make a big deal out of seeing me here. He's cool.
Oh, he's so cool, Bill said. He's so smart. If he's so great, why didn't he tell you what I know about not keeping one's distance from one's past? About getting...
He paused dramatically, widening his stone eyes.
Inside.
Now she leaned down toward him. What are you talking about? He crossed his arms over his chest and wagged his stone tongue.
I'm not telling.
Bill, Luce pleaded.
Not yet, anyway. First, let's see how you do tonight.
Near dusk, Luce caught her first break in Helston. Right before supper, Miss McGovern announced to the entire kitchen that the front-of-house staff needed a few extra helping hands for the party. Luce and Henrietta, the two youngest scullery maids, and the two most desperate to see the party up close, were the first to thrust up their hands to volunteer.
Fine, fine.
Miss McGovern jotted down the names of both girls, her eyes lingering on Henrietta's oily mop of hair.
On the condition that you bathe, both of you. You stink of onions.
Yes, miss, both girls chimed, though as soon as their boss had left the room, Henrietta turned to Luce.
Take a bath before this party, and risk getting me fingers all pruny. The miss is mad.
Luce laughed, but was secretly ecstatic as she filled the round tin tub behind the cellar. She could only carry enough boiling water to get the bath lukewarm, but still she luxuriated in the suds, and the idea that this night, finally, she would get to see Lucinda. Would she get to see Daniel, too? She donned a clean servant's dress of Henrietta's for the party. At 8 o'clock that evening, the first guests began arriving through the wicket gate at the north entrance of the estate. Watching from the window in the front hallway, as the caravans of lamp-lit carriages pulled into the circular drive, Luce shivered. The foyer was warm with activity. Around her, the other servants buzzed, but Luce stood still. She could feel it, a trembling in her chest that told her Daniel was nearby. The house looked beautiful. Luce had been given one very brief tour by Miss McGovern the morning she started, but now, under the glow of so many chandeliers, she almost didn't recognize the place. It was as if she'd stepped into a Merchant Ivory film. Tall pots of violet lilies lined the entryway, and the velvet upholstered furniture had been pushed back against the floral wallpapered walls to make room for the guests. They came through the front door in twos and threes, guests as old as white-haired Mrs. Constance and as young as Luce herself. Bright-eyed and wrapped in white summer cloaks, the women curtsied to the men in smart suits and waistcoats. Black-coated waiters whisked through the large open foyer, offering twinkling crystal goblets of champagne. Luce found Henrietta near the doors to the main ballroom, which looked like a flower bed in bloom. Extravagant, brightly colored gowns of every color, in organza, tulle, and silk, with grosgrain sashes, filled the room. The younger ladies carried bright nosegays of flowers, making the whole house smell like summer. Henrietta's task was to collect the ladies' shawls and reticules as they entered. Luce had been told to distribute dance cards, small, expensive-looking booklets with the Constance's jeweled family crest sewn into the front cover and the orchestra's set list written inside.
"Where are all the men?"
Luce whispered to Henrietta. Henrietta snorted.
"That's my girl, in the smoking room, of course."
She jerked her head left, where a hallway led into the shadows.
"Where they'll be smart to stay until the meal is served, if you ask me. Who
wants to hear all that jabbering on about some war all the way in Crimea? Not these ladies. Not I. Not you, Myrtle.
Then Henrietta's thin eyebrows lifted, and she pointed toward the French windows.
Oof, I spoke too soon. Seems one of them has escaped.
Luce turned. A single man was standing in the room full of women. His back was to them, showing nothing but a slick mane of jet-black hair and a long-tailed jacket. He was talking to a blonde woman in a soft, rose-colored ball gown. Her diamond chandelier earrings sparkled when she turned her head, and locked eyes with Luce. Gabby. The beautiful angel blinked a few times, as if trying to decide whether Luce was an apparition. Then she tilted her head ever so slightly at the man she was standing with, as if trying to send him a signal. Before he'd even turned all the way around, Luce recognized the clean, sharp profile.
Cam.
Luce gasped, dropping all the dance card booklets. She bent down and clumsily started scooping them up off the floor. Then she thrust them into Henrietta's hands and ducked out of the room.
Myrtle, Henrietta said.
I'll be right back, Luce whispered, sprinting up the long, curved stairway before Henrietta could even reply. Miss McGovern would send Luce packing as soon as she learned that Luce had abandoned her post and the expensive dance cards in the ballroom. But that was the least of Luce's problems. She was not prepared to deal with Gabby, not when she needed to focus on finding Lucinda. And she never wanted to be around Cam, in her own lifetime or any other one. She flinched, remembering the way he'd aimed that arrow straight at what he'd thought was her, the night the outcast tried to carry her reflection away into the sky. If only Daniel were here. But he wasn't. All Luce could do was hope that he'd be waiting for her, and not too angry, when she figured out what she was doing and came home to the present. At the top of the stairs, Luce darted inside the first room she came to. She closed the door behind her and leaned against it to catch her breath. She was alone in a vast parlor. It was a marvelous room, with a plush, ivory-upholstered love seat and a pair of leather chairs set around a polished harpsichord. Deep red curtains hugged the three large windows along the western wall. A fire crackled in the hearth. Beside Luce was a wall of bookshelves, row after row of thick, leather-bound volumes, stretching from the floor to the ceiling. So high, there was even one of those ladders that could be wheeled across the shelves. An easel stood in the corner, and something about it beckoned to Luce. She'd never set foot upstairs in the Constance estate, and yet one step onto the thick Persian carpet jogged some part of her memory and told her that she might have seen all of this before. Daniel. Luce recalled the conversation he'd had with Margaret in the garden. They'd been talking about his painting. He was making his living as an artist. The easel in the corner. It must have been where he worked. She moved toward it. She had to see what he'd been painting. Just before she reached it, a trio of high voices made her jump. They were right outside the door. She froze, watching the door handle pivot as someone turned it from the outside. She had no choice but to slip behind the thick red velvet curtain and hide. There was a rustling of taffeta, the slamming of a door, and one gasp, followed by a round of giggles. Luce cupped a hand over her mouth and leaned out slightly, just enough to peek around the curtain. Helston Lucinda stood 10 feet away. She was dressed in a fantastic white gown with a soft silk crepe bodice and an exposed corset back. Her dark hair was pinned high on her head in an array of shiny, intricately placed curls. Her diamond necklace shone against her pale skin, giving her such a regal air it nearly took Luce's breath away. Her past self was the most elegant creature Luce had ever seen.
"You're all aglow tonight, Lucinda," a soft voice said. "Did Thomas call on you again?" another teased.
And the other two girls. Luce recognized one as Margaret, the elder Constance daughter, the one who'd walked with Daniel in the garden. The other, a fresher replica of Margaret, must have been the younger sister. She looked about Lucinda's age. She teased her like a good friend. And she was right, too. Lucinda was glowing. It had to be because of Daniel. Lucinda flopped on the ivory love seat and sighed in a way Luce would never sigh,
a melodramatic sigh that begged for attention. Luce knew instantly that Bill was right. She and her past self were absolutely nothing alike.
Thomas! Lucinda wrinkled her small nose. Thomas's father is a common logger.
Not so, the younger daughter cried. He's a very uncommon logger. He's rich.
Still, Amelia, Lucinda said, spreading her skirt around her narrow ankles.
He's practically working class.
Margaret perched on the edge of the love seat.
You didn't think so poorly of him last week when he brought you that bonnet from London.
Well, things change, and I do love a sweet bonnet.
Lucinda frowned.
But bonnets aside, I shall tell my father not to permit him to call on me again.
As soon as she'd finished speaking, Lucinda's frown eased into a dreamy smile, and she began to hum. The other girls watched, incredulous, as she sang softly to herself, stroking the lace of her shawl and gazing out the window, only inches away from Luce's hiding place.
"What's gotten into her?"
Amelia whispered loudly to her sister. Margaret snorted.
"Who is more like it?"
Lucinda stood up and walked to the window, causing Luce to retreat behind the curtain. Luce's skin felt flushed, and she could hear the soft hum of Lucinda Bisco's voice just inches away. Then footsteps as Lucinda turned away from the window, and her strange song abruptly broke off. Luce dared another peek from behind the curtain. Lucinda had gone to the easel, where she stood, transfixed.
"What's this?"
Lucinda held up the canvas to show her friends. Luce couldn't see it very clearly, but it looked ordinary enough. Just some kind of flower.
"That is Mr. Grigori's work," Margaret said. "His sketches showed so much promise when he first arrived, but I'm afraid something's come over him. It's been 3 whole days now of nothing but peonies."
She gave a strained shrug.
"Odd. Artists are so queer."
"Oh, but he's handsome, Lucinda."
Amelia took Lucinda by the hand.
"We must introduce you to Mr. Grigori tonight. He's got such lovely blonde hair, and his eyes. Oh, his eyes could make you melt."
"If Lucinda is too good for Thomas Kennington and all of his money, I doubt very much that a simple painter will measure up."
Margaret spoke so sharply that it was clear to Luce that she must have had feelings for Daniel herself.
"I'd like very much to meet him," Lucinda said, drifting back into her soft hum.
Luce held her breath. So Lucinda hadn't even met him yet? How was that possible when she was so clearly in love?
"Let's go, then," Amelia said, tugging on Lucinda's hand. "We're missing half the party gossiping up here."
Luce had to do something. But from what Bill and Roland had said, it was impossible to save her past life. Too dangerous to even try. Even if she managed it somehow, the cycle of Lucinda's who had lived after this one might be altered. Luce herself might be altered. Or worse, eliminated. But maybe there was a way for Luce to at least warn Lucinda, so that she didn't walk into this relationship already blinded by love, so that she didn't die a pawn in an age-old punishment without even a speck of understanding. The girls were almost out the door when Luce got the courage to step from behind the curtain.
"Lucinda!"
Her past self whipped around. Her eyes narrowed when they fell on Luce's servant's dress.
"Have you been spying on us?"
No spark of recognition registered in her eyes. It was odd that Roland had mistaken Luce for Lucinda in the kitchen, but Lucinda herself appeared to see no resemblance between them. What did Roland see that this girl couldn't? Luce took a deep breath and forced herself to go through with her flimsy plan.
Not spying, no, she stammered. I need to speak with you.
Lucinda chortled and glanced at her two friends.
I beg your pardon. Aren't you the one handing out the dance cards?
Margaret asked Luce.
Mother won't be very happy to hear that you're neglecting your duties. What is your name?
Lucinda.
Luce drew nearer and lowered her voice.
It's about the artist, Mr. Grigori.
Lucinda locked eyes with Luce, and something flickered between them. Lucinda seemed unable to pull away.
You go on without me, she said to her friends. I'll be down in just a moment.
The two girls exchanged confused glances,
but it was clear that Lucinda was the leader of the group. Her friends glided out the door without another word. Inside the parlor, Luce closed the door.
"What is so important?" Lucinda asked, then gave herself away by smiling. "Did he ask about me?"
"Don't get involved with him," Luce said quickly.
"If you meet him tonight, you're going to think he's very handsome. You're going to want to fall in love with him. Don't."
Luce felt horrible speaking about Daniel in such harsh terms, but it was the only way to save the life of her past self. Lucinda Biscoe huffed and turned to leave.
"I knew a girl from, Derbyshire," Lucy went on, "who told all sorts of stories of his reputation. He's hurt a lot of other girls before. He's destroyed them."
A shocked sound escaped Lucinda's pink lips.
"How dare you address a lady like this? Just who do you think you are? Whether I fancy this artist or not is no concern of yours."
She pointed a finger at Luce.
"Are you in love with him yourself, you selfish little wench?"
"No," Luce jerked back as if she'd been slapped. Bill had warned her that Lucinda was very different, but this ugly side of Lucinda couldn't be all there was to her. Otherwise, why would Daniel love her? Otherwise, how could she be a part of Luce's soul?